Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast joining you again. It's Tuesday. The Milwaukee Bucks, still the best team in basketball. I don't think it's going to change. I think that's where we're headed, obviously, at this point. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast. On the other line is the Milwaukee Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Matt Velasquez. Matt, the Bucks, they continue to be, boring. They don't even have Giannis Antetokounmpo with his young son. His first-time parent was born on Monday, so they didn't have him against the Sacramento Kings. They just go out and do what they do. They go on a 13-0 run in the fourth quarter, and that's all she wrote. This team is boring, Matt. Give me something interesting.
Well, Marvin Williams arrived.
Yes, that's interesting.
That is interesting, and I would hesitate to use the word boring only because
yes,
last night's game wasn't exactly boring. I mean, they were struggling for a decent amount of it. They weren't really clicking. They had trouble with the Kings' small lineup at times when Harrison Barnes was just, you know, making everything from outside, really trying to pull Brook Lopez out of the paint. But then, you know, Eric Bledsoe got going. Pat Connaughton had a couple, like, really impressive passes. Chris Middleton got rolling. Their defense got some stops and you know, suddenly it's a double digit win. But I think that it was, you know, kind of a, you know, a weird up and down game. You know, it ended where it normally ends, which is a double digit Bucks win. But at least it was a little bit different in the way that it got there.
Yes, an exciting start to the fourth quarter. Eric Bledsoe, Chris Middleton, Brook Lopez, like you said, those guys, of course, the, you know, kind of B, C, and D plans. If Giannis is unavailable, they all came through for that win against the Kings. Bucks have now won 5 in a row. They are on pace yet again to win 71 games this season. Again, pretty impressive. As of February 11th, they are still on that pace with 46 victories now. In 53 tries, very impressive. But as you said, the storyline right now is the addition of Marvin Williams. Word broke Friday night that the Charlotte Hornets would be buying out Williams, a 15-year veteran in the league. As I imagine most Bucks fans know, he was the second choice in the 2005 draft when the Milwaukee Bucks chose between Marvin Williams and Andrew Bogut. Of course, they went with Bogut, who had a very fine career, 14-year career in the NBA in his own right. And now Williams still in the league and didn't become a superstar, much like Bogut. Didn't quite reach that level. Injuries playing a factor, not quite to the degree that it did for Bogut, but still a reliable veteran who can shoot, who can defend. And the Bucks, who were singing the tune of, we're really glad there were no moves made a couple nights earlier when the trade deadline came to pass, they were saying, oh my gosh, what a great veteran addition all of a sudden. And understandably so, because it does seem like Williams is kind of that perfect fit. They had to get rid of Dragan Bender. They had to cut him to make room for him on the roster, which was tough. But it seems like this is exactly the type of guy the Bucks would want to add, right? I mean, we kind of talked about the ideal prototype. This is the veteran who can defend, who can shoot. I mean, that's kind of exactly what they need, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And, you know, I don't think that they necessarily need any more guards or wings. You look at, obviously, with George Hill out, he'll be back. But with him out right now, they're kind of limited in terms of their point guard options or guys who could play the traditional point guard. It's Eric Bledsoe, and then they're kind of shoehorning Dante DiVincenzo into that role, which he's done pretty well throughout the season. But, you know, it's a little bit different vibe. You have your wings and Wesley Matthews and Kyle Korver, Chris Middleton, Pat Connaughton, Sterling Brown, you know, all those guys can kind of fit in at the two or the three. But Marvin Williams gives them a little bit more depth in that kind of like 3-4 small ball five range, where you can have somebody who I think he would have been ideal for that game against the Kings.
I totally agree. Yeah.
You know, Ersan got 4 fouls early. Yeah. He had 4 fouls by halftime and just 13 minutes of action for him. You know, Brook Lopez generally played well. You know, he was, you know, trying to handle things as best he could within the Bucks scheme on defense. And then also on offense, you know, he was posting up to the point where they were sending doubles at him because he was posting up at Harrison Barnes or smaller. And so, you know, that is definitely a mismatch and a little bit of a different look that the Bucks had to deal with. But in the time that Brooks sat on the bench, especially in the second half when you know, Ersan had all those fouls, you know, that could have been a perfect Marvin Williams time where they could have gone to him as that small ball center and not really lost anything. You know, I asked about him in Orlando this weekend, talking to Steve Clifford, who used to coach Marvin Williams in Charlotte. And one of the things he mentioned was that, you know, Marvin's one of the best team defenders he's been around. And so if you put Marvin Williams in a small ball five situation, especially like, you know, the Bucks saw on Monday, and you allow him to be the center, he can still do kind of similar things to what Brook can do, kind of on a smaller scale. He can pick and pop. He can defend on the inside. He, you know, has, you know, I'm interested to see how much lateral quickness or quickness to be able to defend guys if they try and pull him out. You know, but at least he's going to be able to give you that 6'8" frame, you know, long arms, and be able to kind of defend and cause some problems out there, while not giving up anything on offense. You can still play that Bucks 5-out system. So, you know, you could definitely see how he would fit. You know, maybe if I was trying to figure out like what the whole the Bucks might have, because Ersan's kind of more of a typical four. You know, and maybe small ball five or whatever, but I think that, you know, Marvin plays a lot of four, obviously. But having like a size comp backup for Chris Middleton is something that the Bucks really haven't had. I guess you maybe say Kyle Korver, but he's just a little bit. Yeah, I don't know. I think he plays a little bit differently. But just having a little bit more backup size was something that I thought the Bucks could probably use. And obviously in buyout season, they thought that was pretty important.
And a couple days earlier, I don't know if there was consternation among Bucks fans when they did not elect to make a move at the trade deadline, but there was seemingly this asset sitting there, this first-round pick that the Bucks acquired when they signed and traded Malcolm Brogdon in the offseason. It seemed like that was such an ideal asset to use in some sort of trade, you know, because the Bucks are going to be relying on their current roster for the foreseeable future for what is hopefully going to be a run of championships or championship caliber seasons. So it didn't seem like a pick was really something they absolutely had to have. But in light of what's happened since then, with them getting Marvin Williams, kind of again the ideal fit guy that they would be looking for, they kind of it feels like they maybe played the lottery and won. You know, they didn't have to give up anything at the trade deadline, and they still added a piece which is going to be, you know, a playoff contributor. No offense to Dragan Bender, he wasn't going to get playoff minutes, even though fascinating project who was, you know, developing at a pretty impressive rate. But it seems like now no one's worried about this draft pick. Now we can, you know, see what the Bucks are going to do. They could possibly, you know, work with that any number of ways going forward. It does seem like they did the perfect thing at the trade deadline by standing pat just long enough to get their man, really.
Yeah, and also, I mean, there's a couple of things that run through my mind as you're talking about that. You know, the draft pick, they could still trade it, just not now. You know, you could wait until June, wait until draft night, and maybe you can package. You know, I mentioned Ersan, like maybe him, because obviously he's in the second year of his deal. He's making $7 million this year. There's a team option for next year for $7 million. So if they decided Ersan wasn't going to be part of their future plans, they could trade him with that first round pick as kind of like salary match or whatever to get somebody else back on draft night, and then that opposing team can take Ersan and just not pick up the team option, and suddenly they cleared some cap space. So that's a possibility. You could do that with anybody on the Bucks roster, theoretically, if you wanted to trade them on draft night with that number one pick to bring somebody else back that you think might be more valuable than using the draft pick itself. You know, I think then also, you know, when it comes to Dragan Bender, you know, he did everything the Bucks asked. Like, they took a flyer on him. He's a former number four pick. He's still a young guy. You know, they thought maybe he could be somebody who they'd like to invest in, and they did, and they reached the point where they realized, okay, we're trying to win this year. And like, yes, we have Dragan on a cheap minimum contract. We have him non-guaranteed for next year. But like you said, he's not going to play in the playoffs. He's not the kind of guy who, you know, if one of the Lopez brothers got hurt, I don't think that they're necessarily going to put him in, you know, as that backup center. I think they'd probably try and do something different, just because, you know, when you're going against teams, you know, like the Sixers with Joel Embiid, or like the Heat with Bam Adebayo, I just don't think Dragan Bender was going to match up. And, you know, you look at the Raptors too with Marc Gasol. I mean, Dragan Bender is a skilled player, but he still isn't a very physically strong player. And when you run into teams like that, it's just going to be a lot harder for your defense with him out there. And it's not necessarily anything wrong with him. I think that they were really happy with the way he progressed and how much stronger he got under their kind of strength and conditioning regimen. You know, it kind of just reached the end of its natural life. And, you know, I would not be surprised at all by the time this podcast comes out, you know, the Bucks waived Bender on Monday. I wouldn't be surprised if a team picked him up off waivers, you know, maybe by the time people are listening to this, because if they pick him up off waivers, they get him at the minimum contract that he's on this year, and they get that non-guaranteed year next year. So some team, you know, I thought like the Golden State Warriors, I wouldn't be surprised if they grabbed him. They have a whole bunch of empty roster spots, and they're not necessarily trying to win. They're trying to test things out and see what guys can be and maybe who can fit into their future. I could see how that would be kind of a natural fit. And obviously there's other teams in a similar situation, maybe the Hornets even. You know, it might end up being a Dragon Bender for Marvin Williams, you know, quote-unquote trade. Yeah, you never know. But I think that, you know, standing pat at the trade deadline was something that the Bucks, they weren't dead set on doing. I think that they still had things, you know, that they were working on or interested in or trying to figure out all the way up until the deadline. But it's something that you have to weigh, you know, obviously the cost-benefit analysis and how important that addition will be relative to what you can get maybe in the buyout market, knowing that you can waive Dragan with very little consequence. And I think at the end of the day, they didn't find something that they thought would bolster their team enough to give something up or to send assets back that they couldn't necessarily do later.
Is this the roster? Do you think this is the roster that will go into the playoffs, or could we still see yet another buyout candidate? You know, there's a lot more guys to come, presumably. Is there still a chance the Bucks make one last tweak to this roster?
I would be surprised if they did, because doing so would mean cutting Sterling Brown, who, you know, even on Monday was playing, you know, pretty you know, extensive minutes and playing well against the Kings.
Yeah, with George Hill out, it's really risky to cut, you know, to cut baits with Sterling Brown right now.
Yeah, and you don't want to, you know, necessarily do that, especially since he'll be a restricted free agent this summer. And I don't know what his value is going to be on the open market, but I don't think it's going to be necessarily prohibitive. It's not like a Malcolm Brogdon situation where some team was going to swoop in and offer so much more than the Bucks were going to offer. I think he might have a market. Teams might be interested, you know, but at the same time, he remains an asset where, you know, you can either bring him back as a restricted free agent, or maybe if there's a team that's in cap hell, maybe you can organize a sign and trade where you can, you know, do something like they did with Malcolm Brogdon and get something back in return for Sterling Brown if a team wants to give him maybe more than the Bucks want to, but they don't necessarily have the cap space to do it. And also he's like I said, he's a valuable player. He's a useful player. He's somebody who got playoff minutes last year, has been in and out of the rotation this year, but you can see how he could help them towards the close of the regular season or in the playoffs, and maybe limited opportunities, but still help. So he'd probably be the only one who they would realistically cut. I mean, DJ Wilson, they've already picked up his option for next year, so you'd be eating a lot of money to cut him to bring in a buyout guy. And you know, Thanasis Adetokounmpo is not somebody they brought in to cut for really any reason. That's kind of going against the whole point of him being with the team. So there's just not too many guys who they'd be getting rid of. So I expect that they're done in terms of buyouts, unless like something crazy happened in the next, you know, 20 days, and for some reason Marvin Williams became unavailable to them, a la Pau Gasol last year. But even then, that came like right at the last, toward the last days that you could sign someone and have them be playoff eligible. I think that's March 1st or March 2nd this year. So, you know, you would have to have something happen, you know, which you never want to happen to Marvin Williams between now and then you just have to cut him and bring somebody else in. But that's really unlikely. And I think that this will be the team that they go into the playoffs with.
Looking at what other teams did in the trade deadline, there weren't a lot of moves that really impacted contenders. There were only a couple guys that were moved to teams that are realistically in the title chase. And I did hear one, well, we'll say Bill Simmons, prominent NBA theorist, suggesting that some of the moves the Miami Heat made were made with the intent of getting Justice Winslow off the books for a couple years from now and possibly making a run at Giannis in free agency. And that's a rabbit hole. We can go way deep in there if you want. We'll stay on the surface for the time being. Do you see any moves that were made that were specifically made with the Bucks in mind, either as we need to find a way to beat this team in a 7-game series, or we need to start imagining what our structure is going to be a couple of years from now when Giannis could potentially be available on the open market?
Well, I think every team at this point is trying to keep cap open for 2021. That's just like standard operating procedure for everyone. It's not just Giannis who's going to be a free agent that summer. There's going to be a lot more guys, and especially, compared to this summer, where I don't think there's too many guys who are going to be free agents this summer. Most teams don't have cap space. Like, we say this now, maybe we'll be wrong come, July 1st, but I don't anticipate there being a ton of like big movement just because there aren't too many guys available. And 2021 is the year. Like, that's the year when a lot of guys could potentially be free agents. Teams will start to have cap space again. It's all getting lined up for that. So it could be a feeding frenzy that year. So it's pretty normal for teams to want to keep their cap clear for 2021. It's not just about Giannis, even though it is, pretty strongly about Giannis for certain teams, hoping that they can get into that sweepstakes if Giannis does not take the Supermax this summer, which there is currently no indication that he would or would not. It's just that teams have to do their due diligence and leave that cap open in the case that that possibility does come up, because you don't want to be the team that has no cap space in a summer where a generational talent is available and maybe would have been interested. So, that's kind of just, standard operating procedure, like I said. When it comes to teams upgrading at the trade deadline, we saw a lot of East teams pretty much stand pat. I mean, the Raptors didn't do anything. The Celtics didn't do anything. The Pacers didn't do anything. The Sixers, they brought in a couple bench shooters from the Warriors, Alec Burks and Glenn Robinson III. I don't know how much that'll move the needle, but I know that, they obviously want to get more shooting and more guys that they can throw into that rotation, not just to beat the Bucks, but to beat anybody. I mean, they sometimes play lineups, or often play lineups. Their starting lineup, has two guys who aren't great shooters, Ben Simmons, and then Joel Embiid is not a great 3-point shooter. And so you're running into spacing issues, and the Sixers have, dealt with that for a while now. But I think that, maybe they got marginally better, but it wasn't like by leaps and bounds. We'll have to see how those guys play off the bench and how they fit, and if the Sixers can ever figure out how to consistently win on the road. But then the Heat, I mean, I'm very intrigued to see. Obviously, they made the big splash by getting Andre Iguodala, by getting Jae Crowder, by getting Solomon Hill. I think the first two names are probably going to be more impactful than the third, though Solomon Hill is a veteran. He can shoot threes. He can do a few different things. But I think in terms of guys who are going to get a lot more minutes with that team, I think Iguodala will, and Jae Crowder will. And it gives them a deeper, more versatile lineup. Obviously, they got rid of Dion Waiters, who wasn't playing at all. Justice Winslow, who's promising, I guess, but he's been hurt, and maybe he didn't fit perfectly into that team. And James Johnson, who, just a big, strong, experienced veteran, who has mostly been displaced this season, by Myers Leonard, by Bam Adebayo, by Kelly Olynyk. Like, he just wasn't being used. So, they took a few guys who weren't playing, and they turned them into two, at least two guys, if not three, who will almost certainly play rotation minutes in the playoffs. I think they were already a tough team, and projected to be a tough out in the playoffs. And maybe this will make them a little bit more difficult to play. We'll have to see how Iguodala, in particular, is able to readjust to playing in the NBA, able to shake off the rust and We'll see how much of a contributor he can be, if he can still be something similar to what he was, you know, two or three seasons ago, where he was obviously a key part of the dominant Golden State Warriors. But that's still to be determined. And you know, I'm looking forward to the, you know, I think the Bucks and Heat still have two more games left this season. So I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, how those matchups go, because they haven't played since October, a game that Jimmy Butler didn't play in, a game the Bucks lost where they blew a 20-point second half lead. You know, and obviously both teams are different since then, and yeah, it should be fun to see.
Yeah, I'm also very intrigued to see the Heat, and since we last chatted, they played another Eastern Conference sort of heavyweight, at least that was the view coming into the season, the Philadelphia 76ers on February 6th. And the Bucks, it wasn't a blowout per se. I think the final spread was 11 points, but the Bucks are better than that team, and I think kind of displayed it. I really have felt that, even though there have been a lot of issues with the 76ers this year, that you know, it hasn't left my mind that they have the talent they have. They're going to be dangerous, and I felt that way all along. I'm starting to lose that feeling. I'm starting to think that this team really is, at best, last year's Celtics team, that they're just not going to get it together. I don't know if that's premature to write them off, and I haven't completely written them off, but it's starting to get to a little bit of a crisis point. This is a team that just cannot win a road game. It's really bad. And I don't know if you, when you watch the Bucks play the Sixers, obviously the Sixers got the best of them on Christmas Day, but it's starting to feel like the Sixers are an afterthought, and you have to worry more about the Raptors and the Heat, maybe like the Pacers, than you do the Sixers. What did you think seeing them up close and personal again last week at Fraser Forum?
No, I think the Sixers are still a team to, I don't know if they'd be concerned with, but be wary of. Obviously, you know, they've had their issues. They've struggled on the road. There's questionable fits on the roster. It doesn't seem like they're playing to their potential. But, you know, we still saw on Christmas, when they play their potential, when they have Josh Richardson in there, who didn't play, you know, at Fraser Forum on Thursday. I'm trying to remember what day it was, Thursday. You know, but when he is in there, I think it adds to their team. And, you know, when they can kind of get it going, they are a formidable foe. And they're also 24-2 at home. That is the best record at home in the NBA, which is wild. You know, 24-2 is really, really good. You know, for reference, the Bucks are 25-3. But 9-19 on the road, it just doesn't really make sense. Especially, you know, when the Bucks beat them, it ended a four-game losing streak, or it continued a four-game losing streak for the Sixers, all on the road. They went on a four-game road trip, lost them all. And so, you know, I think that, you know, come playoff time, you know, maybe the 76ers will figure it out. They'll have maybe locked in or adjusted or whatever. And it'll be a tough series for them in the first round, no matter who they play. And if they can make it to the second round, you know, right now, if they win that first round matchup, they'd be slated to play the Bucks in the second round. That's a really tough second round matchup. That's what everybody thought was going to be the Eastern Conference Finals this year. So, you know, it's going to be an early out for, you know, theoretically one of those teams if the standings stay the same, you know, which I don't think you would ever expect, as a fan of either team, that it would end in the second round like that. So I think they're obviously tough. The Raptors have won 15 in a row. Hello. You know, I know that I mentioned last time on the podcast they hadn't necessarily played the most difficult schedule, but man, like, they just keep coming. Like, they played the Pacers a couple times in the last week. I don't know how the heck they won the one in Toronto. You know, the Pacers had like an 8-point lead with like a minute or two left, and Malcolm Brogdon had a couple late turnovers that were mostly unforced. Just, you know, the Pacers just fell apart down the stretch. But even when they had games where, you know, I think the other night Gasol was out and Ibaka was out, and it just didn't matter. Like, they have been really impressive this season in the sense that no matter who they have out there, no matter what injuries are going on, like, they just keep playing well, and they have a deep roster and a deep bench, and they're able to get the most out of those guys. And Nick Nurse, you know, obviously he's coaching Team Giannis on the All-Star team, or for All-Star weekend, because, you know, Bud did it last year, and coaches don't don't coach 2 years in a row. But this is obviously well deserved for Nick Nurse. You know, what he's doing with this team has been really impressive. And I forget where all of this started, but Sixers tough. Raptors are incredible. Celtics are still, you know, have a really great point differential and a really good team. And the Heat, you know, they've given the Bucks trouble in the past, and they project to, with the lineup that they have, to give the Bucks trouble in the future. So I think we're setting up well for a fun playoffs and some interesting matchups.
Yeah, I didn't mention the Celtics myself, but that's not a team to sleep on. They've won 7 in a row, 10 of 11. They threw up 139 on the Los Angeles Lakers a few games back, and some of the wins, they haven't had the toughest schedule in the world lately to get on this winning streak, but they, you know, they did go in and win in Oklahoma City. They beat the Sixers on the road, you know, at their place, one of those road losses. So they're white hot as well. Kemba Walker, one of the best players in basketball. So that's certainly no team that you can take for granted. Speaking of the playoffs a little bit, I think we're probably at the point in the season where we can start looking at the other teams kind of on an individual basis, and I'm sure we'll talk more about those top-tier teams as we get closer to the postseason. The Bucks did face off with the Orlando Magic over the weekend, and actually won with 112 points, but it went in the book as 111. A point got taken off the board after the game had gone final, and in something that I'm not sure either one of us has ever seen before. I don't know what happened there, but assessing Orlando as right now they're the eighth seed. They would be the team that faces the Bucks in the first round. The Bucks have swept Orlando this season. I don't anticipate much resistance whatsoever, but I didn't know if there was anything Orlando brought to the table that could give you even the tiniest bit of pause in a series should they face off with the Bucks. And then tell me what happened there. How did they take a point away off the board? What happened in that circumstance?
Yeah, so after the game, they said that I guess a Giannis free throw with 127 left in the first quarter, I might get the time wrong, but it was around that time in the first quarter, was initially counted as a made free throw when he missed it.
Okay.
And like, I'll admit, that, like, sometimes I don't pay attention as close as possible to the score early on. You know, they're shooting free throws. I'm trying to, you know, make some notes or do whatever. Like, the score is whatever. We'll get there. At some point we'll pay really close attention to the score at some point. So I didn't really notice that, like, if they added a point or didn't add a point. But apparently they added a point when they weren't supposed to. And after the game, the NBA was like, "Oh, our bad. It's actually 111. Sorry." Which I don't know. I've seen that before. And a lot of people, like, rightfully questioned, like, well, what if it was a close game? Like, what if that mattered? Like, would the NBA have admitted it? What would they have done? Like, what, you know, if it was, you know, 112-111, what happens?
Right. And to be like, clear, not even just a one-point game, but if you're talking about a difference between a two-pointer or a three-pointer, it impacts your shot selection, your strategy in the final minutes. I mean, obviously none of this came to pass, but it certainly could have.
Sure, it could have. So that was weird. But in terms of the Magic themselves, I think they know that there's a talent gap there, that they're not as good as the Bucks. And Steve Clifford even said it before the game. He was like, listen, if we're going to win this game, we're going to need to shoot the three ball really well. Like he just knows. Like, he knows that that's what it's going to take, that the Bucks are going to give up some open or, you know, contested threes. They're going to live with certain shooters taking shots. And that's just how their defense is built. They're going to take away the rim, and they're going to try their best to contest threes and just kind of live with the results. And the Magic shot like 25% from threes. And that was it. Like, you know, they were hanging close. They were, they were hanging close. The Bucks were up by 27 in the third quarter. But then they got it close. They got it to within 9. But they just couldn't shoot their way out of it before the Bucks, you know, kind of put their foot down and said, okay, we got this. And I think that, you know, the Bucks are just a much more talented team, like I said. And it doesn't help Orlando that Jonathan Isaac is hurt and that he's got a knee issue that I don't think will keep him out for the rest of the season. I mean, maybe it could. Maybe they could elect to keep him out for that long because they want him to be healthy. They want him to be a piece of what they're doing going forward. He had been really, really good on defense, really impressive. I remember in games against the Bucks just being super impressed by the way that he was disrupting just so much. So it doesn't help them that he's out. But they just don't have enough shooting, enough scoring, enough different options, enough just high level guys to slow the Bucks down. I mean, they have a lot of length, and they made things difficult on Giannis. I think he was 6 of 17 in that game. It definitely wasn't one of his best games. But when Giannis isn't playing well, the Bucks have still had other guys step up. Where Chris Middleton was good, Brook Lopez, was 5 for 5 on threes. Eric Bledsoe, Bud said after the game, he thought he was phenomenal, just the way that he was aggressive and making things happen. And so, like I said, even when Giannis isn't playing his best, I mean, and he still had like an incredible stat. It was like 19 and 18 and 9 or something like that. Like, he still put up crazy numbers, even when he's not at his best. And so you just kind of expect that if this is the playoff matchup the Bucks have in the first round, which right now would be, the Magic are 2 games behind the Nets, and they are 3.5 games up on the Wizards. So they're pretty comfortably in that 8 spot. So if this is the first round matchup, you would expect that Giannis is not going to necessarily be slowed down very often in a 4-game series, maybe 5-game series, and that they just have so many other guys who can hurt you that I can't imagine Orlando wins any more than 1 game just because of the disparity between these two teams.
George Hill's been out for a while at this point, and I know, I'm guessing he'll be back after the All-Star break with his hamstring issue, but have you heard any of the latest on that? It does seem like there are times where they definitely miss him. I mean, he's a low-key, big-time absence that they've had for the last few games.
Yeah, so we've asked Bud about it plenty, and every time we ask, there's really not much of an update. It's basically just, he's out, he won't be back soon, he's working on some shooting, but very, very minimal movement with the shooting. He's not doing any strenuous work. And they're just kind of taking it slow. I think that they see no reason to rush him back. They know how important he is and how great he's been playing this season. And, as somebody who is a veteran, who's been in the league for, more than a decade at this point, you want him to have the time he needs to get to 100%, to be rested and ready for the playoffs. And so I think that's just what they're focusing on. And they're going to let him probably, stay out until after the All-Star game. And maybe if he's still not 100% coming right out the gate from All-Star break, they'll let him wait a little bit longer because they need George Hill to be able to, man that second unit, to potentially play crunch time minutes, and just do all the things he's been doing this season. They need him to do that down the stretch and deep into the playoffs.
Real quickly, kind of a stock up, stock down type of thing. We've seen in the last few games, Brook Lopez has seemed to have found his 3-point shot, and we've mentioned at great length how he's been such a valuable rim protector and is still doing plenty to help this team win. But the 3-point shot that was so valuable last year had kind of seemingly abandoned him, but now lately, I believe there was at one point he'd hit 7 3-pointer takes in a row. So things seem to be turning a corner. Small sample possible, but man, what a weapon that would be to have that 3-point shot back, that arrow back in the quiver. And then Ersan, you talked about him already earlier on this podcast about how he would be a candidate for, potentially a trade closer to the draft or something like that with what's left on his contract. It seems like Ersan has dipped a little bit. He definitely struggled against the Kings on Monday night in stretches, and it's a little worrisome, only because, like you said, if one of the Lopez twins get hurt, Ersan's going to be involved in the next phase of that. He's going to soak up a ton of minutes, and it does seem like, as it stands right now with everybody healthy, Marvin Williams is going to chew into Ersan's minutes probably more than any other player. Are you seeing that, or is Ersan struggling, or maybe is that just my own impression? And is the 3-pointer back for Brook Lopez?
Well, for Brook, well, let's see. That he's made 7 of 9 over the past 2 games, but before that, it was ugly. It was like, 1 of 6, 0-5, stuff like that. So yeah, he's going to need to be able to hit that shot, with a little bit more consistency before I say he's back. He's had a few good games this year, but he's still shooting 29.7% on threes, which is, really surprising considering how well he shot it last year and the high volume that he shot it at. With Ersan, that wasn't great. I think he did pick it up to his credit. He was pretty solid in the second half when he did play against the Kings. Made a few big shots, got some rebounds that the Bucks needed. But I'll be interested to see, how the time gets split between him and Marvin Williams. If Marvin can break his way into the rotation. Obviously, Bud doesn't like necessarily going any more than 11 deep. And if George Hill comes back, that kind of pushes a lot of other guys down. So we'll have to see how he fits in and, whether it's a consistent thing or whether they rotate. I think Bud's going to want to get Marvin in there at least a few times just to get him acclimated to his teammates and build some chemistry. And, there's no substitute for actually playing game minutes. But I think that if there was a reason for one of the Lopez brothers not to play at some point down the road, maybe Ersan would soak up some minutes. Maybe it would be Marvin Williams soaking up some minutes. But the Bucks also might just say, we'll just go Giannis at center and throw shooters all around him and see what we can do, especially if other teams decide to go small too. So it's not like it's Ersan or bust, which is a good situation for the Bucks to be in. Like, you don't want to be, all your chips into the, in on Ersan all the time. I think there are going to be some days where you can ride Ersan, but other days, it's okay if you kind of can go a different direction. And that's really the positive thing here for the Bucks. By bringing in Marvin Williams, like, you just have another option to add to your depth and your versatility, when you come into a playoff series. And having as many guys as possible, as many different combinations of players and different lineups and styles that you can play is huge, because teams are going to try and take away your best options. And if you can kind of start throwing some curveballs, doing some different things, it's going to kind of help you out in the long run.
Liam Charles Antetokounmpo was born on Monday. We mentioned that at the outset. The Giannis is a first-time dad as of Monday. You've got a couple daughters. You got any first-time parenting advice you could throw Giannis's way before we get out of here?
Well, I would just say that, it's important to enjoy it. It is fun. It is also very tiring and stressful and all that kind of stuff. I think Chris Middleton had some good advice after the game on Monday, saying that Giannis needs to kind of, learn how to change diapers real quick, because he said he didn't know how to change a diaper. He hadn't changed a diaper before his daughter was born. He goes, but you learn fast. He goes, also listen to the mom. If you don't want to incur her wrath, which is all very strong, strong advice. I would say that, getting the little pacifier clips. So there's a clip that you can clip to like the onesie, and then that way the pacifier falls out of their mouth. It stays clipped to their shirt and doesn't fall on the floor. Those are really good. big fan of those. Yeah, that's probably it. I think just have fun, enjoy it. Get those pacifier clips, learn to change some diapers, and be ready. What about you? You have kids.
I certainly do. Yeah, for a normal human being, NBA players unfortunately don't qualify, but for a normal human being, my advice is always the same. Take that baby everywhere, because even though your life is over, it's not over yet. That baby is immobile. Take that baby everywhere, go out with the baby, go to dinner, go to the bar, go see your friends, live your life. Don't be one of those people who just shuts the kid down in a house, because there's going to come a time where it is impossible to leave the house, to even go to the grocery store. So enjoy the immobility for the next, 12 to 13 months, knock on wood if you're lucky. So that is always my advice to first-time parents. Don't let your life disappear just yet, because it's coming. It's coming for you. I mean, I love my kids, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's true. Like, you forget that, at least, when you have kids who are a couple of years old, you forget, like, oh, man, like, back when they were, before a year old, you could just bring them anywhere, especially the first like 4, 5, 6 months. You just like strap them on in Baby Bjorn or a Catan or whatever wrap or whatever thing you have, you just go wherever you want, and they sleep, and it's wonderful. And then they reach a point where they don't sleep anymore, and your life is hell, and that's fine.
Yes, and they have opinions. That's the worst, when they develop their opinions about what you should do, what you should feed them, etc., etc. I keep saying I love my kids just as a caveat, basically over every sentence when I talk about my children. But yeah, that's what we got. What's coming up on the Bucks schedule? Gosh, I'm already drawing a blank. They got one more game before the All-Star break. I don't even remember who they're playing on Wednesday before everybody takes off for Chicago.
They're playing the Pacers in Indianapolis, and the
Yes.
Pacers have lost six in a row. So we'll have to see what the Bucks are able to do. If they're able to take their win streak into the All-Star break, obviously something they want to do, or if the Pacers can snap their losing streak and get their first win against the Bucks this season. The Bucks are 11-0 against Central Division opponents. Not that the Central Division is very good, but the Bucks are 11-0, and the Pacers are the second best team in the Central. So, you know, we'll have to see what that's all about. We don't know yet if Giannis will be back for that game following the birth of little Liam. If I had to guess, I would say he will be. But I don't know. Every family's different, and I wouldn't begrudge him if he took some more time to hang out with that little one, because I know that I enjoyed spending time with my kids when they were born, and work did not matter to me at all. So I could see how he might want to spend a little bit extra time, especially before having responsibilities for All-Star Weekend. But I could also see him as a competitor saying, okay, I was here for his birthday, and I'm going to go do some work now.
Yeah, Malcolm Brogdon, as we know now, not an All-Star this year. Domantas Sabonis selected. The Giannis took some heat for his All-Star selections when Team Giannis was chosen Thursday night before it was announced before that Pacers game. What did you think of that? On paper, it does look like LeBron got all the like superstars, and Giannis built probably more of a team. maybe he's just thinking of recreating the Bucks, but obviously in these All-Star games, none of this matters. Everybody takes their shots. It's the same thing, you know, no matter who's on your team. But Giannis, not a future GM, you think?
No, he's not.
you're not going to sugarcoat it.
No. And, well, also, I don't think he actually wants that. I remember, you know, multiple times, especially at All-Star games, people ask him what he wants to do after basketball. And he's like, you guys aren't going to see me. Like, I'm going to have an island and I'm going to be gone. you know, and he's said that kind of at other times, too. But I think in terms of building a team, he took the path of, for like the first eight picks or nine picks, he just took Eastern Conference guys. Not that he was trying to take guys from the East. Like, he had like a little notebook and he had players he wanted to take and all that. But the West is really good.
Some would say markedly better.
Yeah, and has some really great players that he didn't pick. And like, if this game was actually, you know, traditionally broken up East and West, you'd probably say the West would win, right? So LeBron has basically a lot of the West guys and with a few guys from the East, you know, scattered in, and Giannis is the opposite. He's got almost all East. I mean, the starting lineups are East versus West, and the West one is better. I will tell you that because it's true. And, you know, I'm not sure how this will go, but I also thought as I was watching it, I was like, well, it seems like Giannis is just stacking this so that he can win MVP.
Ooh.
Like he built a team that like he's going to be able to do what he wants and he's going to be the main attraction. And, you know, last year he really wanted MVP. Like, he was going for it hard. And then, you know, his team kind of fell apart toward the end and they lost. But if they had won, he was the clear MVP. So we'll have to see if he's able to, you know, make his mark again. I think that he wants that award. You know, it's funny because he doesn't really go after awards or personal accolades at all, you know, during the regular season, and really kind of downplayed the MVP a lot of last year and has continued to downplay the MVP since then. But All-Star MVP, he definitely wants it.
Yes, he. I guess any team with Giannis could still capably win, and I certainly think if that team beats the West, Giannis will be a big reason why. We'll have to chat about the All-Star game on the next podcast. That'll be taking place again this weekend, February 16th in Chicago. Giannis is in the game, of course. Chris Middleton's in the game, also in the skills competition and in the dunk contest. Pat Connaughton. We'll have a lot to talk about when we come back early next week. Matt, thank you for joining us. We'll have to chat with you again very soon.
All right, sounds great. We'll talk to you next week.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You know where to find us. Please leave a rating and review. Let us know what you think. Find us on Twitter. You know where to find us there, too. We hope you enjoy the All-Star break and a little break from NBA basketball. The Bucks could still be the earliest team to clinch a playoff berth. They will not do it by the All-Star break, but could have their magic number down to one. The record is February 25th. The Bucks on track. They're going to have a lot of opportunities to do that before Feb 25. So something kind of to watch. Obviously, we know the Bucks are going to the playoffs with their eyes on much bigger prizes, but something fun to watch. Thanks for tuning in this week. We will chat with you again soon.